even buzzing my butt through the weekend. By the time I get home, there's not an ounce of sanity. Between the dogs, my mama's calls, is it against the law for me to get what I need? A good friend and a glass of wine. Someone to say it's gonna be alright. A good friend and a glass of wine. A little pick me up to get me through the night.
Welcome to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss on the Right Stream Radio Network. It's great to be on again today, another Friday, 7 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. I am here. I'm Lisa Tarvis, and I'm here with Daria DiGiovanni, Daria Ann. Hey, Daria, how are you?
Hey, Lisa. Hi, everybody. I am doing great. I'm feeling really good.
Yeah, I bet you are. You've had so much going on, and you finally completed a project, and we've got to talk about that. But just to give everybody some information, we started Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. I think it premiered November 29th of 2013, and we're trying to focus on women's issues. You know, Love, Liberty, Lip Gloss. The things underneath each of those umbrellas, I guess. And so if you want to find out more about the show or about our other shows on the RightStream Network, visit rightstreamradio.com, and you'll be able to get information on Daria Ann and on me. Kristen Fetterman, who is also one of our co-hosts, not here with us tonight, but sometimes here with us. And so check out rightstreamradio.com. And find out more about all our different shows. We've got a great lineup of shows right now, with more exciting shows to come. But for tonight, we wanted to try and we're going to try and do a little different type of format, I think, which will be kind of focusing a little bit more on Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. And we've been having a lot of guests. And the guests have been fantastic, and we still want to have guests. But we also want to be able to just talk amongst ourselves about the things going on in our lives. And we know that there are so many other ladies out there that can relate. with the same sort of things that we're living with right now. So and dealing with. So, but Daria Ann, I want to ask you first, Daria. You finished a major project this week, so why don't you tell everybody about that? That was something you've been working on for a real long time.
Yeah, almost 3.5 years actually. Been working on a book, ghostwriting a book for a very special client. He's also become a friend of mine. He's actually like a brother to me, really. Just been a very good friend, and he is originally from Israel. So for me, it was even more of an honor to ghostwrite his book because, you know, to be able to express his concepts and his ideas in English, you know, knowing that for him it's a second language and he really needed somebody to be able to eloquently put all that together for him. It was quite a challenge because Shlomo, his name is Shlomo Atiyah. I mean, that is the author name that you will see on the book when it's published next month. But he's a very deep, deep thinker. And Lisa, he's very, very spiritual. So probably the overriding of this book is one God for all people. I would say if I had to pick, like, the major theme, although it's definitely, it's a futuristic fantasy that draws very heavily upon history, because we're trying to educate but entertain people at the same time. So there's humor in it. We need to learn a lesson from history. It upholds, you know, the rights of individuals to pursue their dreams. But it's all told in a very entertaining story. And a lot of it came out of his experience after a motorcycle accident in 2003, pretty much nearly ended his life, and he went to the other side. And he met up with three angels who told him, you know, have free will and you can stay here if you want. It was great. You know, he felt really good. And he was just like, man, I want to stay here once he realized where he was. And they said, well, you know, you can stay if you want to, but we really recommend that you go back and finish your work. And after that, you know, he said to them, well, you know what? I'm not going back in that body, because if I go back in that body, which was broken and paralyzed for a while, he said, I'm not going to be able to work. I'm going to be work for other people. And they promised him, okay, well, if you choose to go back, we'll make sure that you get to about 95-96%, almost normal. And so that's what happened, and he really believes strongly that the book is sort of the integral part of that mission, and I just feel very honored and privileged to be able to be a part of it.
Did he have the book already written in a different language, and you were, like, interpreting it, or was it, like, brand new?
No, let me tell you something. When I first met him, and the reason why we met is because when I published my book in 2008, one of my girlfriends had a book signing party for me in early 2009, and that's where I met him, because he was a friend of her husband, but he was there. And so when he met me, we realized we share a lot of the same values and outlook on things, and about 6 months, yeah, maybe, I think it was 2010, late in 2010, he contacted me and said, look, I don't know if you remember me, but I was at your book signing, and I really believe that you were the right person for this. He had nothing written down. He just had a lot of concepts. And I will say this book is very multifaceted. And the reason why it took so long was because he had so many concepts that I had to figure out how to drill down and put it into a story. And it was just so overwhelming at first.
Right.
This is why I'm excited now that it all came together.
Right. Yeah, that's a lot of work. I mean, that's, you know, having the ideas, and especially when you're working with somebody someone whose first language isn't the same as yours, that's got to be a difficult task.
It was challenging, and that's one of the reasons why, like, in the last year, I spent most of my time actually in person with him, you know, here in South Florida, and that has really helped, and it's been an amazing process. I will say, and I think, Lisa, because February, thank God this is the last day, but Mercury was in retrograde for this whole month.
Right.
And not surprisingly, that was what I was trying to finish, the last part of the book. And let me tell you something, it was like pulling teeth every single day. I would literally force myself to write something. And every day I would pray to be like, please, God, please, angels, just let me get something out. Let me complete this another section today.
Right.
And finally, you know, the other day when I finished it, I was just like, thank you, God, because it was Mercury retrograde, and it was just, I had some personal stuff going on this month, and, man, it was just brutal there towards the end, but I'm really thrilled that it's done, and I love the marketing aspect of all of this, so I'm real excited about doing his blog, which we do have set up, and we're going to do a series of YouTube videos on his channel, which we're going to release weekly, where it's going to be like a Q&A format. I'll be off camera asking him questions. We're going to take topic by topic, and he'll talk for about 5-10 minutes. We're not going to make them really long because we don't want to, you know, we want to keep people's attention, but I think that's really going to help. And if you go to his blog, it's shlomoatia.wordpress.com. I have the synopsis posted. I also have the foreword on the blog that's also going to appear in the book, because I wrote a foreword for him that explains a little bit more about him and his motivation for writing. It's kind of like setting up the story so people understand where he comes from.
Right. Right. That sounds really good. It sounds like it's going to be really interesting, and I'm looking forward to reading it because it sounds like he's had an interesting experience, to say the least. And what did he do? I mean, besides this book, what has he done since this near death experience?
Well, Shlomo has been. Let me just quickly tell you about his life. He was always one of these kids, one of these people, souls that came to Earth and always had a lot of questions and didn't just accept things at face value. So he was raised in a very traditional Jewish home in Tel Aviv, Israel, and his parents, especially his dad, they couldn't stand his questions about God and the nature of God and his sort of, I don't want to say rejection, but he didn't like the confines. You and I have talked about this before,
yeah.
Like traditional religion. But he was also very entrepreneurial. And so when he was 13 years old, he started this very successful business selling bikes. The only problem was they were hot bikes that he had stolen and retooled, and he was making a lot of money doing this. But once he got caught...
That's funny.
Yeah, well, once he got caught, his mother, she said, I had a good mom. She was a good disciplinarian. She goes, she beat the crap out of me, pardon the expression. And not just that she beat me up, but she did it in front of my friends to make it totally humiliating.
Right.
And then the judge, you know, when they reported it to the authorities, the judge said, all right, Shlomo, you got two choices. You're either going to a kibbutz or you're going to a religious, you know, Jewish Orthodox, you know, religious school. So at first he selected the school. Right? Well, they threw him out after 3 days. The rabbis, they couldn't stand a constant questioning about stuff.
Really?
So the kibbutz actually saved his life, because what happened there was he was able to channel all this restless energy into productive things. So he learned how to become an electrician. He learned how to become a mechanic. He learned how to be a plumber. He learned all these practical life skills, which later on when he moved to the United States, he used. And now he's got a very, very successful business where he repairs and creates. He builds and repairs commercial equipment, like for restaurants mostly, refrigeration systems, ovens. But these are special. This isn't like the stuff you have in your house. I mean, these are special, you know, bagel machines and yogurt machines and stuff like that. But he actually builds prototypes, too, for small businesses. So he's very, very smart and very spiritual and very busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, it's going to be really interesting. So you did all, I think I saw that you were doing all the editing, you said, on this book too, which is a huge task.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, I'm a little bit unorthodox in the way I write and edit. I was editing, like, when I was stuck on step three, I was like, okay, I'm going back to one and two, and I'm just going to edit.
I did that with my book too. I did the same thing. I was like, you know what, I need a break from coming up with new stuff. I'm going to go and I'm going to edit the first couple chapters or whatever.
Yeah, it's like it kind of keeps you involved in the story, and the more
yeah.
I read it, the more I think it, and the more, now I did send it out to some beta readers, and I thought I sent it to you, but if I haven't, I will send
no,
it to you.
No, you did. I do have it in my, I still have it on email. I need to download it so I can read it, but it's, yeah, I definitely have it, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
Well, actually, you know what, I will send you a new copy, because since then, I love the find and replace feature on Word, but I made a huge mistake and it ended up misspelling a bunch of words.
Oh, okay.
Which I realized. I'll send you a new version.
Okay.
But I think between the beta readers, I think I'll be fine in terms of the editing. The most important thing was to get all this concept across for all these different industries, like energy, food, medicine, the justice system, and to present them in such a way where it's entertaining. It's all done through characters. And that was the hardest part, was to keep the book, you know this, you're an author, keep the book moving along at a pace where you're going to hold people's attention
right.
And get everything across that you want them to know.
Right, right, absolutely. Absolutely, and that's hard. I mean, there's so much work that you know that you have to put into, and like I know when I'm doing my editing, I end up rewriting. I mean, I'm like, oh, I should add this, I should add that, you know, and it's just like, and then I have to go back and edit again because I just changed a bunch of stuff, you know. So it was always, for me, the editing yourself, I can't imagine not editing myself. You know, like, how do you do that? How do you pay somebody to edit your book? I don't know. Finding the little mistakes and stuff is one thing, but then you all of a sudden you think, wow, I could expand on that, and or add another detail or add a few more details about this. I don't know. I think I'll always want to edit my own work.
Yeah, see, I feel the same way, and I know there's a lot of different schools of thought on that. Most people say, no, you have to hire a professional editor.
Mm-hmm.
But with this book especially, I was very concerned, especially people who might not be receptive to some of his messages. There's a difference between editing and saying to somebody, well, you know, you could expand on this a little bit more. But then there's those people that just don't like what you have to say.
Well, yeah, right.
So you have to be careful, and with this book, I felt very protective of it for that reason. So I think, and the people I selected, like you, I chose very carefully because I know somebody like you is going to get the spiritual aspect of it, and you're not going to be like, oh my God.
You have to be. I think when you're editing a book or you're reading a book, you know, you have to be open-minded. If you choose to read the book, I mean, just because it doesn't fall into your necessarily your exact beliefs. Or what you've been brought up to believe doesn't mean that it's not going to add something to your life, or that it's not going to let you think about things in a different way. It doesn't have to change your beliefs, but it can certainly make a difference. I love that. I love being able to, you know, to give people the ability to people read my book. It's completely spiritual. It's completely based on my life and my experiences as a child with the ability to see and talk to angels, and my ability as, you know, with my psychic gift, and then my schooling, and becoming a metaphysician with a master's degree in metaphysical science, and all the stuff that then all that background and all that stuff that built up to me believing what I believe. Do I expect everybody to parrot me, you know, and to think that they're going to believe exactly what I believe? No, but I think that it gives people hope. It gives people that, you know, are a little lost at the time, maybe a little bit of hope and guidance. I think, and like in my book, there's something everyone can relate to, and I, no matter what your beliefs are. And I think that's what I'm going to find when I read this book, that, Shlomo's book, because I think that, you know, even if it's not, you know, cookie cutter, what, you know, everybody likes to hear religious-wise about God and all of that stuff, either is mine. You know what I mean? But it's everybody's own personal experiences and take on it. And I've also often said that, you know, that I think that religion has gotten, I don't know, every time I say it, I think I shouldn't say it, but religion has got, I mean, I think that, you know, God created the world and sent us prophets, and he sent us prophets to teach, you know, to teach us lessons and for us to learn. But I think we as humans separated that and made religions. You know, we separated ourselves from each other through religion. And I think that's probably, and tell me if I'm wrong, kind of the same attitude maybe that you're talking about with this book.
Oh my gosh, Lisa, absolutely.
Yeah. That's...
And I have to say, you know, see, Shlomo, and I agree with this. I mean, there's a lot in this book for the very reason why we go into, I'll tell you a little bit about how it's set up, and I want to talk about that a little bit because it's a huge part of the novel, huge, huge part. And I learned a lot. Let me tell you something. I learned more about history than I ever learned in school from doing the research for this. But Shlomo is against any kind of control of us human beings, whether we're talking about a huge overreaching government, a religious hierarchy. Anytime human beings are trying to impose control of other human beings,
right,
it's that. And so, you know, the book starts about, it's in three steps. It's called Steps to Salvation. So we have step one, step two, step three. Step one starts out in the year 2415 in Arusha, Africa, and we're in a history class, Mr. Bauer's history class. And each kid that's in this class, each character, there's 21 of them. The reason they're there is because back in the year 2015, we had to have an Armageddon war, which is explained in the book that God knew this was going to happen, and it had to happen for a reason. And we very much limited the casualty. It's not a bloody war book at all. I mean, it's not even, believe me, it's not like that, but we had to set it up that it happened that way. And then after the war is over, the Armageddon Commission, and this was to have a plot also, if you were a member of a family that had done horrible things, like a Hitler or a Joseph Stalin, you know, you're related to a genocidal dictator or a banker or a monarch, anybody that imposed control during the end days, what Shlomo calls in the book the end days, then you were sent to Arusha, Africa. It wasn't a nice neighborhood. It wasn't like it was a prison, but you were behind like this walled city, and these families were asked, or they were told, okay, it is time for you to make restitution to the name over several generations. And so by the time we get into this history class now, Mr. Bauer, the kids are taking this test called Steps to Salvation, and whether or not they pass it is going to determine whether we can end this, what Shlomo calls the race unity experiment, and open the gates and allow these kids to freely explore the world, which there is a trip around the world, and that's step three. So, yes, and so in the course of that, there's a Mason Rothschild character who represents the history of money, and we get into that whole history of money. And let me tell you something. I mean, I was raised Catholic, and when I had a research, you know, the total corruption of the Catholic Church in the, you know, 14th, 15th, 16th century with these popes and indulgences and what was going on and why we had the Protestant Reformation, I mean, I learned about some of this in school, but, man, to really do my research, to be able to have this character regurgitate his answers back, and it's all tied in with money and religion, I'll tell you, it was quite eye-opening. So I'm happy that I had the experience because I feel really good about it, and I think people need to understand what has happened. So I think it's important.
Yeah, I think so, too. I like it. I like the concept of it, and I think that it's going to be definitely an interesting read, especially for me, because, you know, it sounds like we're kind of, you know, feeling on the same page, you know, with that sort of that thinking regarding religion. But so he put it in, it's kind of like fictionized a little bit.
Oh, totally. Yeah. In other words, these kids, they all have the name of somebody real through history, but the kids are fictional characters. They're 400 years into the future. Part of what Shlomo was trying to do, and this ties in with the whole religion thing, of one God for all people, the reason why we sent them to Africa was because we wanted to show that there really isn't race for human beings. I mean, we all look different. Obviously, some of us are white, some of us are black, some of, you know, we're different ethnicities and whatever. But Shlomo's whole point in taking a lot of these historical figures who were, let's say, Caucasian, you know, in the end days, and having their descendants go to Africa 400 years into the future, their characteristics change. And the whole point of having that, of putting that in the book, is to show that, you know, our humanity, it all comes from God. Whether, no matter what color we are, or what race, or what nationality, again, it kind of all ties in with that one creator kind of thing. And really, it's our souls that are the most important, not the outer packaging. So that was really his motivation for setting that up. And it was kind of a really good sort of, you can't miss that point if you're reading the book. I mean, it really hammers that point home, and that's why he wanted that in there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it sounds like it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a really fascinating book. And so it's coming out next month, you said?
Yes, we're still waiting. Well, first of all, first Shlomo, I mean, he's so busy, but he needs to get headshots done. He was supposed to have them done the other day, and his work schedule prevented it. But I want to give a shout-out to my book designer, Kia Heat, because she did a great job with the cover, and she's going to do the back cover as soon as we have the headshot. So next, like in the next couple of weeks for sure, and I'll be announcing it everywhere. So.
Oh, good. Everybody can look for that then, and and I know I'm going to be pre-reading it, and I'll definitely get on that, because I have been really looking forward to reading it. I mean, since you started talking about it, which was, like, I think when I first met you, you were,
yeah.
This was a project. I mean, it was a long, you've been working on this project for a long time.
Yeah, I have. And he's been really good to me. I mean, I've been able to devote most of my time to it, you know, just because of his generosity. And honestly, Lisa, I don't think this is something I could have done part-time. I really,
yeah.
It just had so much research involved.
Right.
Just a lot. So,
yeah. You know what? It's so great to be able to have the freedom to really kind of just do something and put your all into it and not have to worry about, you know, 50 other projects that you're working on and things like that, which is, you know, it's not easy. And especially when you have a family and kids and, you know, and all those different things going on too. Like for me, I can never write full time. I can never put, you know, I can never get into a book and not have a billion other things going on in the background. So, you know, it's nice to be able to be able to do that, which you were able to do with this. And that's fantastic. At least for the last few months, you've been able to do it that way.
Yeah. And I really believe, and not because this is an ego thing, I just really do believe that God put us together for a reason, that I was really the right person for this.
Right.
Because he and I agree on like 95% of things.
Right.
That's another thing as a ghostwriter, I'll just put this out there too. I mean, I've turned down projects in the past because I just didn't connect with the person, with the client.
Yeah.
Or buy into what they were trying to do. And if I don't, I can't do it. I literally cannot do it unless we'll agree on every little thing, but we need to agree on the majority of things.
Well, sure. I think so. I think that's so important because, I mean, when you're ghostwriting a book for someone or co-writing with someone or, you know, whatever, you really do have to have, I mean, that's like a marriage. You know, you're like married to that person for a while, so you really have to be on the same page, and you really do have to have at least the core fundamental work ethic, you know, be the same and things like that. There has to be a lot of trust. I mean, you know, you don't want somebody you feeling like, oh, I'm doing everything here. You're not doing your share. You know, all of that. It's there's a lot to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I really looked at it as a privilege and an honor to be able to put this together for him, to create it for him. I mean, he had all the concepts are his. I cannot take credit for any of the concepts. And even the idea that he had for the history class. But I had a lot, within all that, I had a lot of creative license, especially in the last part, which was purely fictional. I mean, I had to make up stuff as they were going along each stuff. And let me just say one other thing, Lisa, as a writer, too. I mean, I had 21 kids in this class, and plus their teacher on this trip. And so it's like I had to really think about how and where to involve the characters and make sure that all 21 of them got enough time.
Right.
You know, I didn't want to forget about any of them.
Right.
So that was
Yeah, that's a lot. It's a lot of work. And you know, I always think, you know, I've never written fiction yet. It's something that I want to do. And you and I have talked about that before. I really do want to write fiction at some point. And I keep thinking, you know, I think I have to actually make this cast of characters up and really learn them, be them, like embrace them, like understand who they are and what their values are and everything to really be able to genuinely write. In a way that honors each one of them and makes it look like these are real people. Otherwise, you know, and to be consistent. I catch so many like inconsistencies when I read. I'm editing all the time. I swear, I edit books that have been published for years, and I'm like, ha, spelling error, ha, grammar error. You know, I'm ridiculous, but I'll catch inconsistencies. Like, wait a minute, they said before that this person, and it could be like a series of books, and I'll remember like from the first series that something's not like measuring up to the book I'm reading at the time, and I'll sit there and I'll remember it, and I'm like, and I've always said I don't want to do that. I want to be able to. You know, do every character, you know, justice. And make sure that I'm being real to who I'm making them be, you know, creating them to be.
Yeah.
I think,
no, it's so important.
I think that's got to be harder. I just think that fiction has to be a more difficult, you know, a more difficult thing to write than a spiritual book like I read or a, you know, something like that. I mean, even though with a lot of the self-help books and a lot of the different types of books that are out there that are not fiction, a lot of the nonfiction books, there's a lot of work that goes into them, and a lot of things where you sit there struggling, do I really want the world to know this about me? you know, because it's so true to you. It's like writing an autobiography. You know, you're writing history about yourself, and then you're like, how much do I want to really share with the world? You know, and to do it well, you got to be willing to pretty much spill the beans, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny you said that because even though my first book, Water Signs, is quote unquote fiction, a lot of it is based on real life.
Right.
So in a way it was easy because I could hide behind different characters.
Right.
A lot of my main characters' experiences are mine, but they're also borrowed from different people that I've met, you know, through the course of my lifetime at different parties and different points in my life, and maybe heard somebody talk about their experience with a certain thing and thought, oh my God, I'm going to make this happen to my character. So I think fiction kind of gives you a little bit of a cushion where you can say, no, that wasn't me. I just made that up. Or,
right.
You know, a friend of mine, you know.
Well, I know. When
my office, but it's true, you don't have that advantage.
No, when I read Water Signs, your book, your first book, I know that, like, I thought, that's Daria, that happened to Daria, that's Daria, and then I'd be like, did that happen? I felt like calling you in the middle of the night, being like, is that real, or did you make that up, or is that somebody else? Because there were so many things where I was just like, I knew so much of it that was real from just knowing you, and then other things would happen, I'd be like, I don't remember her ever mentioning anything like that. So I'd get confused.
Yeah.
And I'm a late night reader. I read at night, you know. It's what I usually do. I get my Kindle out and I start reading, and I fall asleep when my eyes get tired. That's the only way to shut my brain off is to focus it on somebody else's life, kind of. So I read, and then my eyes get tired, and I'm like, then I'm thinking about that book I'm reading. I'm thinking about that person's life, you know, that I'm wrapped up in right now, and I can kind of shut my own stuff off. And kind of relax, you know. We've had so much.
I totally understand that.
Yeah, I've had so much friggin' drama in my life lately. I'm just, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate with it, but I'm just so done with drama. Oh my gosh, everybody in the drama. I mean, I have three teenagers, or well, a 20-year-old, a 19-year-old, and a 15-year-old. So I mean, drama is kind of part of what comes with my life, you know. You can't really avoid it, but I'm just seeing it in other areas of my life where I can choose to have it or not have it, you know, and I'm really getting, I don't know if you've ever gotten to this point, but like, I'm really getting sick of it. I'm getting like, I'm just like, you know what, if I've got to deal with my kids. I've got to deal with the drama that comes with being a mom and a wife and all of that. But do I need this extra stuff? You know, it drives me crazy. We've had, Scott and I have had, we're totally changing subjects now, but this falls under probably all three of our categories with Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss, because there are aspects to it that reach over into different areas. But we've had pretty much a live-in house guest for probably the last 4 years, but it's been three different house guests. First, it was my sister who was going through a breakup of her marriage and an abusive marriage and an addiction. And she was staying with us for a while until, you know, she was going to, she had a brain tumor at the time that was operable, and they got rid of it and all of that. It's a long story, but she was fine again, and she started drinking again. So I tossed her out. I was done with the drinking, and she was starting to become very mean to my kids and stuff. So anyway, so she moved out, and she moved out not really wanting to, but she moved out, and then my brother.
Did the right thing.
Yeah, it had to happen. You know, it was either that or my family was going to be damaged permanently by this. But then my brother moved in for quite a while. My brother's a lot of fun. He's just a nice guy, and he works nights, and he's up, you know, so he's sleeping during the day, and when you know, he leaves at 7 o'clock at night for work, and you don't see him. It's 12-hour shifts, so, you know, it was just like we never even saw him, and he was here for quite a while. He moved out, and my brother-in-law actually still has hepatitis C, and he needed a liver transplant, and he got very, very, very sick. And if you don't know much about hepatitis C, I didn't really know anything about it, and he had had it for many, many years, and went untreated, and he ended up getting very, very sick. And so towards the end, he was in the hospital so much, towards like the last, I don't know, I guess this was probably around early fall, late summer, early fall, that he got so sick that at some point, you know, right around October, I told my husband, you know, I'm afraid, because he's living in this house with these other people, but I'm like, I'm afraid he's going to, you know, that something's going to happen and nobody's going to catch it. Nobody's going to understand that, because when you're ammonia, what happens is your ammonia levels will spike, and then you kind of become like a child. You can't think right because the ammonia in your body is just too high, and all kinds of different things shut down in your body. And one of the first ones is your brain. So you start acting not real normal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really, really scary. So I said to my husband, it's his brother, I said, you know, I think maybe we should offer for him to move in with us, because that way we can keep an eye on him, you know, until this, because, you know, you don't know how long you're going to be on a liver transplant list, if you even get a liver at all. And he was on the list, but he'd been on the list for quite a while, and he wasn't getting anywhere, and he was getting so much worse. And I was just worried that he was going to, you know, not have anybody around if something happened. And I work from home. I'm home all the time. So it just made sense to me. And, oh, my God, what an idiot I am. I swear. I'm like, it has become such a nightmare, and it's,
oh, no.
Yeah, it's just, he got a liver transplant, by the way. He's doing fabulously, very healthy, doing really, really, really well, but he's such a different person. He's never been married. He's older than Scott or I, and he's never been married, he's never had any kids, never really been part of a family in the traditional sense. And, he's just not like fitting in with a family. He just doesn't understand. And it's stupid little things. Like, okay, for me, if you come downstairs, like the guys and my son and my husband, if you come down from the upstairs in my house, you better have a shirt on. Okay. You just don't walk around my house without a shirt on. I just don't like it. I think it's inappropriate. I think it's just, you know, what if I have a client over, you know, in my office? I don't know. I just don't like it.
I agree.
And it's not, and believe it or not, I mean, guys walk around without shirts and they just don't get it. They don't, you know, it's not a big deal to them, because, you know, it's not like we're like women. We have to walk around with a shirt. You know, we just kind of sort of do, unless we're on a topless beach or something, but you know, you have to, you know, and it's different for men. And he just doesn't get that. I mean, he doesn't get it, you know. And once in a while he'll remember, and then he forgets, and then I'm like, you know, I walk in the door the other day and I'm on the phone, and here he's coming down the stairs in just boxer shorts coming down from, you know, and I'm like, I'm about to vomit, okay? It's not a pretty sight, first of all. And second of all, I'm like, what if I've been walking in with a client? What if I've been walking in with a girlfriend or something? They don't need to see that, you know? So it was, it's just been a really, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm not afraid to talk about my personal crap, because this is, you know, about as bad as it gets. But, you know, it's just like, and now, you know, we're trying to say, okay, it's time for you to move on. He's, you know, able to work again. It's time for you to move out, you know, and he's so offended or something. I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. And so we've been struggling with that a lot in the last few weeks. And it's become, you know, the kids aren't comfortable. Wow. I'm like, I just hide. I just hide in my own freaking house. I'm hiding. Because I don't want to, you know, I don't want a confrontation. Because, you know, you sit there, and you put up with so much, and then you get to a point, I think, where, I don't know, I'm like this at least. You get to a point where you either keep swallowing it down and not saying anything, and you can do that for a while, but then comes that place where you snap. You know, and I'm afraid I'm going to get to that point where I snap, and then, you know, that ruins the family dynamics forever. You can't take back, you know, stuff like that. And so I'm having to be real, like, you know, I'm just trying to avoid, you know, avoid the issue, avoid the whole thing. And it's hard because, you know, I'm in my own house and I'm having a little bit of resentment over that. But I'm wondering how many other people have had experiences like that, because, you know, house guests are, you take people in and you're doing it out of the kindness of your heart, and then you end up like wanting them to say, okay, enough is enough, you got to go, and then you're, no matter what, you're the bad guy, you know what I mean? And it's like, even though you did it for the right reasons and all of that, you're still the bad guy. So it's been a really, really difficult experience for me this winter, on top of this ridiculous weather that I know you're not experiencing there in Florida, but we're experiencing, you know, up here in the Northeast, just snowstorm after snowstorm, and you already feel trapped. You know what I mean? Like, I think I wrote that to you in a text last week. It's
yeah.
Like being I'm like claustrophobic. I feel like I'm stuck. I can't, you know, go anywhere. We've had a lot of melting, though. I don't know if you've talked to your family, Daria, or not, but we've had a lot of melting going on. But now they're talking, there's a possible another snowstorm coming at the end of the week. So I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, goody.
Yeah. Next week, another one. And if it, you know, and one of the, they sit there and they start talking about it, and it's like, well, it could end up being, you know, like, just a few inches, or it could be like 16 inches. And I'm like, what? You know, that's a big difference. You know, that's the difference. That's the difference between, okay, I'm going grocery shopping the day before, or, you know what, we'll be fine for a day. You know, it's crazy. But anyway, like I was saying, that whole like this stuff that I've been going through, I think, you know, I feel like some of my, you know, it's like I did this out of love. I allowed this to happen all three times, out of love for my family and but I feel like in another way it's like, you know, I've had my freedom taken away a little bit because
yeah.
I can't even be in my, I'm not able to be who I am in my own house. You know, I'm not comfortable in my own house anymore. I never know what's going to happen, never know, you know, what's going to, you know, take place. And it's just, you know, then that's that thing that makes you just feel good about yourself and feel secure and happy. And, you know, like you're in control of your own life, and that's kind of gone too. And it's a silly analogy, really. And I never saw myself getting to this place, but it's kind of bizarre, you know, that something was so simple can really mess things up quite a bit.
Well, Lisa, you're a good artist, and so is your husband and children. And, you know, as you were talking, the word that kept coming to my mind was boundaries. I think that, you know, just what I'm hearing as the outsider here, and certainly in this particular case with your brother-in-law, you have done magnificently everything you can do for him. I know sometimes we as human beings assume that the other person is going to know when it's time for them to move on.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's an uncomfortable situation of having to maybe have this conversation. And I'm not saying confront in a bad way. I mean, but you're going to have to have a conversation with him because, you know, I was about to ask you, and then you mentioned it, you know, would be able to work now. Well, now that the guy's back to health,
yeah,
and you think everything's good, you would hope that he'd be like, okay, you know what, you guys, you have gone above and beyond for me, which you have, and this is the third person you've done that for. Now it's time for me to get a job, to move out. Thank you very much. You know, I'll come over and visit. You guys come and visit me, but I'm going to now give you back your space, and I'm going to go move into my own space.
Yeah, and I think that's what kind of went wrong is that he's like I said, because of the fact that he's just never been someone to live with. And, you know, other people since he was a small child, and he's in his 50s now. You know, he's been on his own since he was probably a teenager, really. And,
wow.
Yeah, he really was. And he, you know, he was always such a great guy. But now that he knows, like, because we have said things, you know, you need to not do this, you need to not do that. You live with a family now. You have two teenage girls in the, you know, here with you. I'm here. You have to kind of walk this fine line between, you know, it's not the same. It's not like you're living by yourself. So, my husband has had to have that conversation with them. And I think it's just happened. It's happened more than once now that he's had to have that conversation, and it's become really, really difficult. And my brother-in-law's reaction has been to get angry. And so now he's like, you know, we don't ever know where he is, if he's coming home, not coming home, you know, we don't know what's going on. So then I start feeling, okay, you're ungrateful. You know, everything we did for you, and now you're behaving ungratefully. And because you're angry that we're like, okay, time to move on. You know what I mean? It's not like we're kicking him out. My sister, we gave her about 3 minutes notice and threw her out. seriously, it got that bad. Things were that bad. This isn't like that. You know, we're just like, okay, it's time to really start, looking.
Yeah, Lisa, yeah, enough is enough. I mean, maybe he's embarrassed because he's not the one who realized it, but, you know, it does sound to me like there's a little bit of ingratitude. I mean, the guy should be, oh, my gosh. I mean, he should be thanking you, the two of you, over and over again for taking him in.
And that's how it was when he was sick. Like, when he was sick and he was living here, it was absolutely that way. He was very, very appreciative and, you know, thank you, and just couldn't be, I felt like, wow, I wish I would have thought of this earlier, because I actually felt bad that I hadn't thought of it earlier and offered earlier, because I'm like, this is just, you know, obviously the best thing for him. But once he got well, once he started feeling better, he started taking, you know, the criticisms personally, you know, and then it's like, I am who I am, you know, this is who I am, this is how I am, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that, but you can't live with another family in their home and not be willing to make those changes.
Well, now that he's healthy and able-bodied, can be who he is in his own space.
Exactly, and that's
problem solved.
That's exactly the conversation my husband had with him. But unfortunately, it's just been a very it's gotten a little out of hand. I mean, it's just I told my husband from now on nobody stays in our house. My dad, I'll give my dad an exception because my dad lives in Florida and I can never get him to come visit. Because I guess apparently when you live in Florida, you never want to come up north again. I don't know what you people do to the water down there, but something's going on. But so my dad, I can never get him to come visit, especially this time of year. He's like, forget it, no way. And I'm like,
yeah,
you know,
put me in that camp too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know how you are. So that's you know. So I said, I'm like, my dad, okay, I'll let him stay a week or 10 days or something. But that's it. Everybody else gets a one night pass and they're out of here. Everybody stays. What is that saying? There's that saying about house guests and fish stink after 3 days or something. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I always thought that was funny, and believe me.
And I think that you and Scott and all three of your children should be very comfortable with that. I mean, you should really feel good about yourself, but your generosity and your willingness to take them in. But you know what? Enough is enough, Lisa.
Yeah.
Time to draw the line in the sand.
It's hard.
Give them a time limit if you have to. You know, by such and such date, you need to be out of here.
Right.
Period. It's
right.
My house.
Well, he's looking real hard right now, but he's doing so in a bitter fashion. You know what I mean? I think he blames me for most of it because, you know, I think Scott's obviously, you know, he's a guy, he's his brother. I mean, his tolerance is a little different than mine and the kids. So, and like I said, I had rules for my kids. You know, my son's not allowed to come downstairs with his shirt off, you know, into the kitchen. I'm sorry, that's disgusting. If you're coming downstairs, put a shirt on. Quite frankly, if you're leaving your room, you should put a shirt on. But, you know, I can deal with it on the top floor. There's nobody else up here. You know what I mean? But on the second floor, whatever, you need to have a shirt on. You need to be dressed. You know, just throw a sweatshirt on. Just throw a t-shirt on. I don't care. You don't have to be,
right.
You know, come down in a suit and tie, for God's sake, but, you know, but wear some clothes, cover yourself up, for God's sakes, you know. So, yeah, so I've been really, really struggling with that and getting, you know, it's actually been quite depressing because it's starting to get nasty and it didn't need to. you know, it didn't need to. Bottom line is, this is my house, it's my husband's house, and, you know, we get to decide. You know, we're the ones that kill ourselves to pay the mortgage every month, and all the bills.
Amen.
All the bills that come with the mortgage. The electric bill, my God, I can't even tell you. I mean, our electric bill has been like $500 a month all winter long, and higher. This month I just paid $550 for our electric bill. It's electric and gas.
Word.
It's electric and gas together. But it's been so cold, the heater never stops running. It's constant. You know, it's constantly running, and I keep the temperature like 66, 67, 68, you know, depending on what floor of the house it is, because we have two zones. So, you know, it's upstairs. I always keep it like a 66, 67, because if you're up here, you're usually undercover sleeping, you know, so I'd rather be cool anyway. Downstairs, I'll keep it like at 68, at 68 or something, and our guest room is on the first floor of the house, too. So on the first floor of the house, I'll keep it like at 68. Now, when we don't have a guest sleeping in the room, I'll turn it way down. I'll turn it down to, like, 65 at night because nobody's really down there except in my office. And my office gets so hot because it's got a bunch of windows in the front. It gets really warm in there. So we keep it really cool. And that's how much our electric bill is. I'm like, I keep wanting to ask my neighbors, you know, what are your electric bills this ridiculous, or what is going on with us? Do we have something leaking? Do we have electricity leaking somewhere or something? This is like, it just seems like it's so ridiculous.
Yeah, that's high. Crazy.
I know. I talked to my dad in Florida. He goes, yeah, my electric bill was $35. I'm like, oh, really? That's sad, Dad. Yeah, I don't know why it was so high.
A little bit more, Dad.
Yeah, right. But they lived up. My mom and dad lived up here for a long time, and they paid these ridiculous electric bills for the big house and you know the crazy winters, and then they had an in ground pool, so you know then it was heated, so you know they had that electric bill in the even in the summer, you know, with between air conditioning and the pool, so it's expensive. I think I'm moving to.
Oh yeah.
I think the whole meaning to my story is that I'm moving to Florida.
I like that.
I know. Yeah. So if you can if you can clean out a closet or something for me to live in, I'll be fine with that. Really, a closet is fine. I'm not picky.
I would love it if you moved here. Awesome.
I've been bugging my husband forever. I'm like, I want to move to Florida. I'm like, do you know the amount of money we spend, you know, on our house payment and on all the, you know, the electric and all the crazy expenses up here and the taxes. My God, the taxes. I'm like, we could live in a mansion down there and for less money, you know, and be happier because, you know, we'd have vitamin D going through our bodies all the time from the sunshine.
And no state income tax either, which I love.
Really?
Tax time comes around. No state income tax.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice.
I hope it always stays that way. I pay attention to what's going on because I want it to stay that way. Because, you know, the tourism and kind of makes up for that. And plus, you know, listen, these state governments and governments, they need to spend, you know, our money wisely. So anyway, but yeah, there's no state income tax here. So that's another benefit.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm actually, you know, I would love to. And that's one of the things I keep thinking is, you know, I always say I won't leave my kids even when they're older unless they leave me first. Like if they move away, then I'll move wherever I want to go. But you know, for as long as they're right now, obviously they all still live with us because they're still young. But if they move to different states or whatever, then that's cool. We can pick up and go too. And I always said that. You know, I used to make fun of my parents all the time and say Florida was God's waiting room. And, you know, I came up with all kinds of mean things to say when they moved to Florida. I'm like, you just go there and wait to die. Why are you going there, you know?
That's not true, though.
It's not. It's so beautiful. And every time I visited down, you know, I've been there dozens of times. But every time I visited, when I went to visit my parents or something, oh, my gosh, like April, May, what beautiful months. I mean, just gorgeous.
And there's a lot to do, and there's a lot more young people, I kind of like that people think that, because it's like, okay, we don't want it to become overcrowded, but let me say, there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm on the East Coast, and But I love the whole state. I mean, because there's always some place you can go to escape. Like, for me, the West Coast is a great escape. Marco Island, Sarasota.
Right.
It's beautiful, beautiful. Naples. I mean, it's got so many beautiful places. Of course, Disney World is here. Not that I've been there recently. But, and you know, one of my favorite cities, St. Augustine, which you would love. You know, have you been there? It's very, very spiritual.
I don't think so, but I have heard people talk about how amazing it is. And when I do, every once in a while, I'll go on, like, one of those real estate sites, and I'll look up different areas in Florida just to see the kind of house you get for the money. And, you know, and I don't know why. It just kind of makes me sad because we can't move right now anyway. But I do that, and I'll look, and St. Augustine has come up several times as being, you know, a great fit for us.
Oh, I just thought, I mean, let me tell you something. Eventually I want to get out of being so far, like right now I'm in Broward County, and that's a lot of it's because of the book and where my client is located.
Right.
I spent most of my time here in Palm Beach County in the Boca area, mostly, but I definitely want to move, like, further north in the state, either Palm Beach Gardens, which is northern Palm Beach County, or even Martin County. I love the Space Coast, and I love St. Augustine. So I definitely see myself moving further north in the state, but on the East Coast. I like the East Coast better to live, and then I love the West Coast to just, like, escape to on a weekend.
Yeah, my dad is in Clearwater, so that's the opposite side of that's on the
beautiful.
Yeah, he's in Clearwater. I mean, I guess that's right on the bay, right?
Yes, beautiful. I was there a couple of years ago for Philly spring training.
Yeah, that's what everybody goes there for. Yeah.
Yeah, well, my parents came down and they met up with me in Boca, and then we drove over and we met my brother and his wife and two of their kids there, and it was really a lot of fun. Yeah, I mean, it's right on the water. Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous.
Yeah,
the beach is magnificent there.
I love the area around there, and I was looking. You know, when I do my searches, I find out these strange places. This one place was called Lando Lakes or something. Lando Lakes,
yeah.
Like the butter, and I'm like, wow. I'm like, it's really I mean, the homes were beautiful and things, but I'm like, how do you know when you're from out of state, like, or, you know, where you're moving? I mean, what kind of, like, you know, area it is, and, you know, if it's a safe area and not safe area, just because they have nice houses doesn't mean that it's a, you know, safe area to live in. So it's hard when you're looking out of state, but I guess that's why you get real estate agents and things like that. I can't go anywhere. I can't move right now anyway. I mean, I've got, you know, my husband is, as you know, Daria, he has an airline pilot, and he just got promoted to captain. So he's seat locked out of New York now he's going to be having to fly in this new jet he's going to be flying for the next couple of years. So we won't be able to do anything for a couple of years anyway, but then by then the kids will hopefully be more situated, and I'll know what they're going to do with their lives too. That's it. You know, it's so when we started the show and I started saying, you know, I thought it was going to be interesting to have our, even though you and I are very close to the same age, we live so differently. You know, I mean, you know, our situations are so different, and it's kind of interesting to see. I mean, for you, how you could just, all right, I'm going to move back to Pennsylvania. No, I'm going to move back to Florida. You know, and you can kind of, you have that freedom to just do it because you've really just got to deal with you. But that's got to be hard too. It's got to be a little more scary not having like a, you know, like a network of family and people backing you up, I would think, too.
Well, you know what, though? When I first moved, and you know, and this is part of my book, Water Signs, and I'll put a plug in for that again, but I delved into all of that.
Right.
And I feel really close to my family. I talk to my mom I don't think a day goes by that I don't talk to my mother. I mean, I love my parents. It wasn't about, like, running away from anyone as much as it was, okay, I need to get out of this security zone. Got to see how I'm going to survive. I'm like, oh, now, honestly, let me full disclosure. Back in 1994, I moved here for a relationship, got here, found out the guy was engaged to somebody else. It was very devastating. But I was able to look at it, even through all the tears and the hysteria, I was able to look at it and think, I looked around at all these beautiful palm trees and buildings. And I'm like, you know what? why should he get to live here and not me? I'm not running away.
Right.
And so I saw him, I started to see him as a catalyst for me to make changes in my life. And so fast forward all these years later, I see so many really good friendships that I have people that I know I can count on.
Right.
I mean, it's not maybe the same as family, but I do have really good friends that I know I can call in the middle of the night if I needed somebody that would come ready. And I try to be that friend for other people, too.
Right.
So to me, you know, maybe it would be different if I had moved, like, to California. Then I would have really felt like I was way far away, and I would have been way far away
from
people.
Yeah, yeah.
Florida, at least it's a psychological thing for me. I know that I-95, I could get on that road, and, yeah, it might take me 20 hours, but I can get to my parents.
Yeah,
or
you can get there.
It's less than 2 hours,
right.
I can be there.
Yeah.
It's never felt that far away to me. So.
Yeah, you know what, and it's funny because it's really, I mean, an airplane, you're talking 2 hours, and, you know, driving, like you said, probably 20 hours, but it does. California seems like, and you know what, and the lifestyle is not that dramatically different, I don't think, in Florida as it is in California versus Pennsylvania. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
California, it's like people are just different. I mean, I'm not in a bad way, but they're just different. Like, the way they live their lives. If anything, I think Florida, like, to me, I've noticed people seem happier, more relaxed, from compared to up here. In California, I feel like it's the same kind of rat race that we have up here, only it's just a different type of people. It's hard to explain, but I found, like, you know, and I always think a lot of it is, and I'm a big believer in this. This time of year, I take vitamin D supplements, separate supplement, vitamin D on top of my other vitamins every single day, because I think that lack of sunshine, that lack of sunlight, you know, it actually gives you lacking vitamin D in your body, and it makes you depressed, and it makes you sad, and thinking that it's, you know, that I see so many clients come in and they're like, I think I need antidepressants. And I'm like, what you need is some vitamin D, you know, I'm like, try that first, you know, try some vitamin D, see if you don't feel better. Because it's so true. Some people obviously do need antidepressants, and and if you do, you obviously take them. And I never say go off of them if you're already taking them. But when it comes to, you know, if you're finding yourself with seasonal depression, which is so common up here, you know, a lot of that can be an imbalance with your vitamin D. So, I think that's a great place to, you know, because the sunlight produces so much of vitamin D for us, and the sun is so far away right now, and we barely ever see it up here. In Florida, you guys are seeing it, you know, all year round, so you're not going to have the same problems.
Absolutely, that is such a great point. And I'll tell you, I spent the winter of 2012, my cousin passed away suddenly in December of 2011, and I went up there for her funeral, and then my mom ended up in the hospital. Thank God she was okay, but my point is it delayed me being up there, so I worked while I was up there and everything. You know, I was through an agency, I got like a long-term assignment, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and it was through that whole winter of 2012, which wasn't nearly as bad as what you guys are dealing with
now,
but
right.
Even then, I was like, oh my God, I can't stand it.
Right.
The other thing, Lisa, maybe it's because I'm a Pisces and I'm a water sign and all that, but, you know, and even though I can tell you, like, last time I was at the beach was November 1st. I didn't remember the date. But I know that it's there, and I can get in my car, and I can drive up A1A, and I can look at the ocean. And I know it's, like, literally minutes away from me.
Right.
Up there, yeah, I could drive to New Jersey, but it's an hour and a half. You know, it's not, like, around the corner. And I miss just the ability to just go, and even if I'm not actually literally on the sand, let's just go and sit on a bench and stare at the ocean.
Well, and I think a lot of that is, to me, when you look at an ocean, everybody, we get so overwhelmed by the stuff going on in our own lives, you know, like that story I just told, and like, you know, what you were just going through with, you know, finally getting your book finished that you've been working on, and, you know, all these things that take over our lives. When you go and you look at the ocean, you really realize just how small you really are, you know, and I think that's kind of puts things in perspective when we're feeling overwhelmed. You know, when you just go and the ocean is so massive and all you see is ocean from, no matter how high up you go, you know, all you see is ocean. And I think it just puts things in perspective how big the world is and how, you know, and how our problems really are smaller than we think. I mean, that's what it's always done for me. And, of course, you know, for me, as you well know, I would end up on the Jersey Shore, which is, you know, completely a different animal, really, than, you know, than any of the Florida beaches I've been to. But still, it's the same sort of effect. You just realize how, you know, all the stuff that we're going through, it's just a small part of such a big, vast world, you know?
Yeah, it really does. And I feel very, and also for me, it also puts me, and I feel like I'm in touch with God anyway, but when I'm staring at the ocean, it sort of makes me feel even closer.
Yeah, it makes you connect to the universe. I mean, you feel more connected to the universe as a whole because you're, you know, and the universe, you know, some people would say is God, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, you think of it, the universe being created by God. So those oceans created by God and, you know, and the world that goes on in that ocean, you know, like the world that what goes on in an ocean, I mean, just in a small piece of it, let alone, you know, there is a whole different world under the ocean too. So, you know, I get like that with crystals once in a while. I'll look at a crystal, like something, you know, that has a somewhat clear or a smoky quartz or something, a large stone, and that's very see-through. And you see these, if I feel like there are different universes going on because it's different, you know, a crystal forms over so many thousands of years, sometimes millions of years. And you see, you can almost see it in the crystals. It does. It definitely puts things in perspective, looking at something like that. And I would imagine if we lived like at some place where there was a huge forest, you know, or, you know, something like that, yeah, like, you know, one of the national parks that are, I'm thinking of one and I can't think of the name of it for some ridiculous reason, but Yellowstone,
like Yellowstone,
Yosemite and Yellowstone. Yeah. All of that. When you see them, they're so massive. It's probably the same sort of effect. Only we just don't have that as, you know, living East Coast. We really don't have that, you know, that perspective as much, but I bet you it's the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no doubt. In fact, it's funny. I just read a book. In fact, my guest on Tuesday wrote a book called Regular Guy Syndrome, and a lot of the book takes place. It's just character, it's a guy character, and it's sort of like his personal growth journey is really the crux of the book. And so he decides to leave Dallas, and he drives west. He's going to move to California. And the author went through all of this description, which I loved, all this narrative about what this guy was experiencing as he drove through New Mexico and the scenery, and then when he got into California. And then at one point, the character ends up working at this resort in Northern California, and the author had been through all these places, so he described this stuff from his own experience, but just sounded magnificent. And that was one of the things I said to him. I said, you know, I know there have been people that have criticized your book for spending too much time describing all these things, but I actually loved that.
Yeah.
I really felt like reading it, I was taking a vacation.
Right.
And going somewhere new and different.
Right. I think, you know, I watched a documentary, and I'm thinking it was on Yellowstone, but I'm not positive. It was just a documentary on you know, everything that's there. And my God, I mean, I can't imagine the hugeness of you know, the wilderness like that. I mean, that's just mind boggling, you know, to think about how, I mean, just, you know, nothing but trees and forest, and, you know, it's just incredible. It really is. So that's you. So who are you interviewing this week?
So, well, this coming week, actually, I'm interviewing you and John
and
Dr. Billy and Sheena, because it's our Bright Streams one-year anniversary.
I forgot about that. That's right. I have it on my calendar. Don't worry. I didn't really forget. I just forgot for right now. But, yeah, it's on my calendar. I'm really excited about that. Yeah, we are going to be celebrating our one-year anniversary of the launch of the Bright Streams Network. And so we're going to have all our hosts on. And be able to talk to everybody about some, I guess, what we're going to cover, like what are some of our favorite guests are and what, you know, what's working,
yeah.
what's working for our shows and, you know, different things like that. So that's going to be exciting. I'm excited about that. I can't believe it's
well,
1 year
idea.
Already.
With that, I know, I can't believe it. And, you know, we actually, your show was the first one to debut on the network. I believe it was March 3rd of last year.
Yeah, it was really early last year. I remember that. And it's really good. I mean, you know, I've had a little bit of weirdness with the time change because Just Believe, which is the name of my show, went from being on at 7 p.m. on Sundays, and I switched it to 1 p.m. on Sundays. I'm sorry, it was on 1 p.m. on Sundays. I switched it to 7 p.m. on Sundays. Duh. Yeah, I'm even confused, see? I don't even know what my own show's on. No, so it used to be at 1, and I switched it to 7, so I've had, you know, people adjusting to that, but I think 7 o'clock fits most people better, you know, and we on Just Believe, we just cover spiritual topics, you know, paranormal subjects and a lot of different things. This week, we're doing live psychic readings, which is a fan favorite. Everybody loves the live psychic readings, so I have on and doing live readings on air, and I get so many phone calls. It's so hard. Thank goodness somebody else does most of the talking, because I'm on the switchboard the whole time. You know, getting people's names and okay, your number so and your number 37 to talk to the, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, I saw that and I created an event for it on our RightStream Facebook page. And John, I'm so proud, John. He got his show together early for him this week. So I created an event for his show, which is Military Monday. So yeah, I'm looking forward to your show Sunday night. And I'll kind of probably I enjoy really listening. Because I know I'm really mindful of, I'd rather your listeners, you know, get a chance to be read. So sometimes I just kind of hang back and listen, but I'm always fascinated by somebody doing those on air, because it's almost like for the psychic, now for me, not being somebody that does that for a living, it seems like there's a lot of pressure on the psychic, but I guess, you know, you would be up and say, how does that go, really? Does that make you nervous?
You
like,
know what?
I've
done it on a guest. As a guest on a lot of other people's shows, and no, because it's no different. You connect to the person's energy, just like they're sitting in front of you. It doesn't matter. In fact, sometimes I find it easier to read somebody either on the phone or through Skype or something like that. When I do the distant readings, I kind of think it's easier because then I'm not looking at them and trying to figure out like their reaction to everything I'm saying. You know, like I start overthinking it a little bit instead of just going with what I'm feeling. So I'm pretty comfortable doing the on-air stuff. I actually just said last week, I said that I'm going to do a show. I promised that I would do a show where I'm doing all the readings myself. So I think I'm going to do that here coming up in maybe April or May. I'm going to do a week where it's just everybody can call in and get, because I always put my 2 cents in anyway, you know, somebody calls for a reading and I'm like, also, I have to say, you know, and I'm like, they're like, yeah, didn't ask you. So, you know, so I'm going to be the one that they ask. I think it would just be fun. Keeps, you know, keeps things interesting. Gives me a week. I don't have to have a guest, you know.
Give me enough notice, and if you need me to, I can manage the switchboard for you.
Oh,
so you
yeah,
don't
that's
worry
right.
about that.
Yeah, that would be great on the day I'm doing the readings, because that's definitely hard to manage when you're getting so many phone calls. The switchboard gets crazy when you're doing live readings. I kind of said to everybody on air last week, I'm like, you know, guys, listen to the other shows on Just Believe too, because it's not just, you know, the live readings are a lot of fun, and I get a ton of listeners, live listeners and things like that, and they are great, great shows, but I don't do them every week because there's a lot of other things to talk about under the spirituality umbrella too, you know, other than just psychic stuff. So, you know, there's a lot of really interesting people that I have on the show. I mean, we cover some paranormal stuff that's mind-boggling, you know, that experiences.
You have some wild... yes.
Yeah.
You know what I love? You know, and I can talk about this on Tuesday, but one of my favorite shows that you did was about the hospital in Peoria. I can't remember the guest.
Oh, right. Oh, I can't remember. She wrote a whole book on it, I remember. I can't remember her name either. I'll look it up.
But what I liked about that, Lisa, was that the spirits were there because they had been so happy there as humans.
Right.
But they didn't want to leave because they'd been happy. And I'm like, wow.
That's so different.
Hanging around because they actually enjoy being there,
right.
Not because it's the scene of a murder or
something.
Yeah, you know?
And I think that's so much of the time when you talk about hauntings and things like that, hauntings are based on, you know, somebody having unfinished business, meaning that they have a grudge or they have you know, something that they feel that they need to avenge, whatever, and so they stay earthbound. And you know, and I think that there's a big difference, too, and this is one of the things I like to talk about on the air, is I think there's a big difference between earthbound spirits and spirits that just stop in to visit someplace they love being. I mean, a lot of those hauntings, it doesn't mean that they're stuck there. You know, just because they show up and visit every once in a while doesn't mean that they're roaming there and they don't ever leave that area. So, you know, I think that's a thing to put out there too, because people start thinking, you know, wait a minute, you can talk to, you know, when I'm doing a reading or something and all of a sudden somebody comes through, they're like, does that mean they didn't cross over? No, of course not. You can, you know, they can visit,
yeah.
They can visit anytime they want. And absolutely they could do that on a, you know, I, the only thing, like, I want to visit so badly. I want to go, I've never been to, which is, I don't even know why I have never been to Gettysburg. And I really want to.
Oh, awesome.
I really want to go there. I mean, you know, as a psychic, I think that's like the place you want to go. I mean, it's just like, it's like the ultimate, you know, like place to visit. And I've never done it. Those are the spirits that I want to find out. I want to find out why they're there. Are they just visiting? Are they still shocked that they're gone? You know, because that's another reason that they sometimes get stuck there, is because, you know, they're it's so quick. They're all of the, one minute they're, you know, so intensely paying attention and you know, so hyped up, and then the next minute, boom, their life is gone.
Yeah.
You know, and I sometimes think that they I've seen it, you know, where that they feel like they don't realize that they're really dead. They, you know, and of course,
yeah.
Not remembering that, you know, time isn't the same for someone who's passed as it is for us. So even though it may have been, you know, 100 years or something for us, the spirit can feel like it's been a minute, you know. So that's one place that I definitely have on my list of places I want to visit as a psychic, because I just think it'll be fascinating to see what kind of information I get out of spirits there, you know, what some of their stories are. And there's a scary aspect to it, too, because you don't want to see anything scary, you know, and sometimes you can see things that aren't pretty when, you know, when you're dealing with traumatic deaths and things like that. Luckily for me, I don't usually see anything. I just feel it and hear it, you know, so I'm hoping that'll stay the same, because I don't need to see anything that's going to, you know, be traumatic, but I definitely have that on my list of things to do. So you've been there?
It's amazing. I grew up in Pennsylvania my whole life. I finally went to Gettysburg 2 years ago, and then I went again last year, I think. And I highly recommend it, Lisa. And if you do go to take the Battleground tour bus, go in the summertime or like in the spring, because this bus is like has open windows, and we had a great, both times we had an excellent guide, and it's impossible to cover it all with Battleground on foot. You have to take the bus because I don't know how many acres, it's huge. But I can tell you this, and I'm not as attuned to this stuff. I'm getting better, though. I felt a lot of sadness, and as you learn about the different battles and what happened, the sadness for me was almost overwhelming, like what some of these people went through. So I didn't see anything scary, and I'm just saying this is just a person that's not a practicing psychic. I'm very sensitive to a lot of things. I just felt a lot of sadness while I was there, but at the same time, it's beautiful, and I have no doubt that you would definitely pick up on things. And, you know, the funny thing is, too, I mean, the city of Gettysburg obviously has promoted that for tourism, because, you know, you can't walk, like, two blocks without seeing, like, a ghost somewhere.
Right.
You know, this ghost tour, that ghost tour. But, you know, I highly, highly recommend it. It's a beautiful, beautiful area, a lot of history, and every guide that I've ever had on this, I've been there twice, and both times the guys knew, they knew what they were talking about. They were so interesting. And that's what I love, too. I think that when you go to a place and somebody's a quote-unquote tour guide, they really ought to know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
and
really.
Every time I've gone, they have. They've been very, very good.
Oh, that's good. That's good to know, because I definitely want to try that. It's definitely on my list of things to do. And maybe I'll do that this spring. Maybe my husband and I can, you know, not, with the kids being older now, it's a little easier to escape every once in a while. So, you know, they can be here to watch the dogs, and we can go away for a couple days, and, you know, it'll be a nice little break. But I do fear a little bit picking up, because of the empathic side of my abilities, picking up on that sadness. And, you know, so that's probably the thing that's held me back from going so far, is just the idea of, you know, I know there's got to be a lot of grief and sadness there, and, you know, and that's
a lot of pain, I think the Battle of Bull Run, you know, when the stream turned to blood, I mean, because so many people were with the gun, with the, you know, the cannon blaster.
Right.
Yeah, that's one thing I would caution you, because, I mean, that battle was horrendous.
And right. So
it was a lot of suffering before a lot of these soldiers died, a lot of suffering. So that's the only thing you might want to just be careful and prepare yourself.
Yeah, I think, that's the whole thing. I mean, it's just a matter of knowing what to expect, and you can kind of prepare yourself for it, protect yourself a little bit, and not take the emotions on yourself. I mean, I'm still going to feel them, but I don't have to, if I recognize that it's not my emotion, it's somebody else's emotion, you know, it's a spirit's emotion, then I can kind of keep it in perspective a little bit. You know, it's a little easier to deal with. So, but that's definitely on my list of things to do. So anyway, we're about out of time. So I just wanted to say, so Race Stream Tuesday, it's our big 1 year anniversary show this Tuesday. And that's on at 1 o'clock on Tuesday on the Race Stream Network. And then my show, which is before your show, is Just Believe. And we're doing live psychic reading. So,
7 p.m. Eastern.
7 p.m. 7 p.m. Not 1. 7. Oh, my goodness. I can't. It's no wonder. Seriously. I keep wondering why everybody else is so confused. And I'm like, even I'm confused. I don't even know what time my show's on anymore. And I tape it live. I mean, it's live. For goodness sakes. It's not that hard. But did you have anything else you wanted to add or tonight or...
No, I just wanted to thank you. I had a blast, Lisa, and just want to do a quick shout-out to our Wednesday night host, the Family Power Hour. They will be joining us on Tuesday as well. It's Dr. Billy Eisenberg and Sheena Benjamin Wise, family law attorney. They host Family Power Hour, and John told me he'd work. I believe me, I bug him all the time. We're hopefully going to get our technology trend show, up and running in the second quarter of the year. So stay tuned for that, and please tune in to Just Believe on Sunday at 7 p.m.
Hey, everybody, remember that, you know, if you can follow each of us on Twitter. We each have a Twitter account, a Facebook page. Our shows have Facebook pages for the most part. Actually, mine doesn't really, well, if you follow Metaphysical Healing, which is the name of my company, you're following my radio show as well. But, you know, you follow all those, and you can find out exactly what number you dial into, the link to listen to the show. Everything is right there. It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's blogtalkradio.com/rightstream, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and Lisa, you will be thrilled to know I finally figured out how to get the display in the chat room to show up as rightstream. So,
oh, thank God. That's so good.
I'm tweeting out as rightstream. So we are at rightstream, and every time you tweet from Blog Talk Radio, that tweet goes out under the rightstream account, which is awesome.
Oh, that's great.
The only thing they could not do, because they don't connect with Facebook fan pages, no matter what it is, so unfortunately the Facebook status is go out under my personal profile, which I'm fine with, but I couldn't get that. But otherwise, everything else is all fixed, so I'm very excited.
Oh,
so
that's great.
That's radio lady that helped me. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic, because that'll make a lot of difference, because I know even logging on to logging on in the chat room, though, how's that going to work?
No, the log on is the same. It's just that our display name is now Rightstream.
Okay.
So you still log on with our credentials that we've
right.
been using.
Okay.
But it's, when you're in the chat room, it displays as Rightstream. So no matter who's hosting, no matter whose show is on, in the chat room, you show up as Rightstream.
Yeah,
that
well, I can't wait to see that on Sunday. I'll have to check that out. That's really cool. So everybody, definitely follow you can follow #Rightstream on Twitter. You can follow us on @Rightstream, which is also Twitter, and we're at facebook.com/Rightstream, right?
Yeah.
I always have to double check.
Go to our website, lightstreamradio.com, and Lisa has all the links there to all of our social media.
Yeah, that's the only one. That's the only one that's different. I sit there and second guess myself all the time because I'm like, okay, the Rightstream Radio, that's the website, and that's the only thing that's different. Everything else is just right under Rightstream. So everybody, definitely follow us. Check out what we're doing. All of our shows. Like we were talking about, we have Family Power Hour on Wednesday, and hopefully a new one coming soon. And we have Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss Fridays, Just Believe on Sundays, Military Monday with John D. Gresham on Mondays, and then, of course, Daria Ann's show, which is Right Stream Tuesday. So those are the shows we've got right now, and we're working on another one. And I keep seeing you, but I keep seeing your little plugs that you put in to, you know, hint to John when you tweet him and things. So I know you're on him. I know you're on him. He's a busy guy, but we're gonna have a great tech show coming up real soon. So everybody, stay tuned for that. Other than that, I think we're done. I think we've covered everything today that we needed to, and some things that we really didn't need to.
Yeah, but that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, that's what makes it fun. That's good. That's, you know, that's what makes it real. And that's what the show's about. It's about real life. What goes on in real life. No phoniness here. So, anyway, everybody, thank you so very much for listening. And please, again, tune in Sunday for Just Believe. And check out rightstreamradio.com. And follow us, follow our shows, either follow Rightstream or follow Just Believe or Rightstream Tuesday, whatever your interests are. And you can find all the links to all of that on rightstreamradio.com. And until Sunday for me and Tuesday for Daria and me, I'm going to be on Daria's shows Tuesday, so I'm just not going to get enough of me, right? Yeah. Everybody will be like, oh, Lisa, yeah, I remember her. She's on every show. Now, not on all of them, but this week more than most. So, everybody, thank you so much for listening to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. Daria, it's great talking to you, and I will be in touch soon, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
All right, and have a great weekend.
Yes, you too. And everyone, yeah, have a fantastic weekend. It's Friday, and hopefully the weather will be nice for everyone wherever you are. So, have a fantastic week to come, and we'll talk to you next Friday on Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. Bye, everyone.